everyone. It's Christina Herrick, produce editor for The Packer, here again with another Tip of the Iceberg podcast. In this episode, I talk with Jim Baer, CEO and president of the U.S. Apple Association, and we talk about the current state of the apple industry, rising cost of production, inflation, and more. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining me. It's great to see a familiar face that, you know, we connected years ago when I was in the produce industry before. So it's great to have you on the podcast this time.
Yeah, welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. So as I was talking to you before I hit record, you know, part of the conversation I wanted to have stems around this LinkedIn post that I saw from you about cost of, you know, food, cost of inflation, cost of growing, all of that. And I think it's going to make for a really great conversation. So, you know, let's start it off. You know, tell me a little bit about what the genesis was for that LinkedIn post, and like why, you know, our readers, as you know, well know, kind of span the entire produce life cycle. So, you know, What do our readers need to know about what's going on with food prices?
Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here, and it's great to see your smiling face. Yeah, so the LinkedIn, you know, I'd never been on social media. I don't have a Facebook account. I didn't want any of that. But you know, our communications people kept saying, you know, you have an ability to bring information to a general audience that they may not otherwise, you know, be able to grasp. So if I have a talent at this, which I sort of resist even thinking about that, but I guess if I have a talent at it, so that I can take a complicated topic and distill it down for a lay audience. And I've been frankly surprised and gratified to see how many people are interested in like a peek behind the curtain when I tell them things about the apple industry. And I've got something like 7,000 regular followers. And the post that you're referring to about food price inflation, I think the last time I looked, that more than 11,000 people had read it. The post before that, which was about apples in storage. Yeah. You know, that's a common misperception you will hear people talking about. And they think it's a bad thing that apples are available in July that were harvested last fall. And so I went into, you know, controlled atmosphere. And in the last time I checked there, it had been read by more than 62,000 people.
Wow.
Including in this, where I think it gets interesting, if you look at the analytics behind the posts, I find that there will be 3% of the readers, or, you know, 2,500 people in New York City and Los Angeles, and 2,500 people in Philadelphia, and 2,500 people in Chicago. And so roughly 10,000 people, city people, now know how apples are stored in controlled atmosphere that didn't know before. And likewise with this one, you know, 10,000 people, city people, know a little bit more about how hard it is to profitably grow apples. And as we're seeing at the moment, it's virtually impossible to grow apples profitably. So I've been pleased at the response to that. And as you pointed out, you know, what I tried to communicate is that since 2020, the cost to buy apples is up 13%, but the cost to grow apples is up 30%. Fuel is some of that for freight, you know, chemicals and so forth. But of course, the biggest contributor to that would be our number one input cost, which is labor, and that continues to go up and up and up. And in fact, you know, if as we look in the rearview mirror, if the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which U.S. Apple and others worked very hard to get passed, they got passed twice in the House of Representatives. It died in the Senate, unfortunately. But if it had passed the Senate and the president had signed it, it would have capped the adverse wage rates at 3.25%. It would have frozen them for 1 year and then capped future increases at 3.25% per year. So what's the result of that? Had it passed, the wages in the AWER in Washington State would have been $17.42 or $1.30 excuse me, $1.83 lower than they are now. Wages in Michigan would have been $2.81 lower. Wages in New York would have been $1.82 lower. And unfortunately, people who didn't really understand the political climate here in DC now in the nation's capital opposed the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. That was a mistake. It was a huge opportunity missed. The fact that that bill passed in a bipartisan way in this current political environment, I mean, you can't turn on any whatever your favorite news, story is, news provider, without reading about the just sort of the vitriol and the anger and the flat out, hatred that's going on in politics right now. The Farm Workforce Modernization Act had support from the most conservative Republicans and the most liberal Democrats, and they agreed that something needed to happen for ag labor. And so we keep working on it. The job has gotten harder, and certainly the border crisis, although we continue to try to explain to members of Congress that the people that are sleeping under an overpass in El Paso were not on their way to Yakima or Grand Rapids or New York to pick apples. Nonetheless, that complicates the big picture. So labor is a big part of that food inflation story, and it's eased a little bit, but not very much. And so we find that it's a common misperception that people just assume that because they think apple prices maybe went up 5 cents or 10 cents, when in fact they've actually gone down. But they just have this, because they read it. It's this constant drumbeat of stories. Again, whatever your news source is, whether CNN or Fox News or print media, USA Today, whatever, constantly talking about inflation. It's a real thing. It's not happening so much to apple prices. And in fact, if you go back to last summer, USDA had predicted that the 2023 apple crop would be 236 million bushels. At our outlook, at US Apples Outlook conference in Chicago in August, the attendees there put their heads together and they came up with a estimate of 256 million bushels. Well, as it turns out, that's still low. And so what was the result of that? Well, November holdings of fresh apples were up 32%. December holdings were up 23% year over year. And so, depending on local conditions and in variety grown and so forth, growers are telling US Apple now that they're losing anywhere from $50 to $100 per bin. And that's just not sustainable. And so there's a lot of consternation in the industry right now, and I know you know that because you go to industry meetings too, and the hallway talk during the coffee breaks is how much longer can we hold on? And it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've been inside the industry, known the industry, left, kind of saw it from a different perspective, and then come back into it. And it blows my mind that people think that all growers are trying to do is get rich off of apples. And I realize obviously they want to have a profitable business. Everybody does. Everybody wants to be able to feed their family. They want to be able to have a comfortable life and pay their workers and everything else that needs to happen and buy new technology. But I don't see it as an industry where people are just trying to, have penthouses in Miami and luxury yachts. It's an industry
Right.
where people are hardworking and they believe in what they grow, and it's truly that they enjoy feeding people, feeding America, they're feeding the world with their apples. And so it's interesting the dialogue that's going on, and obviously there's a lot of that being fueled by other parts, other commodities. Obviously, I've heard a lot about cereal lately, and having cereal for dinner and talking about food prices, and then all of that dialogue then reverberates out into other things that people buy in grocery stores. But What I thought was really interesting too about your LinkedIn post was you talking about the need for exports. As much as we love to have US apples, as you said, there's a lot of apples to go around. And I know US Apple has fought long and hard to get access to certain markets, and maybe the relationships have changed. But why don't you talk to me about that critical need for exports and kind of what's changed, and maybe what US Apple is focusing on in the future to get those apples out.
Right. Well, that's a great question, and it is a key part of the picture, a big piece of the puzzle. And I will tell you that last year we at the U.S. exported 22 million bushels fewer than we did in 2014 and 2015. That's down 41%. A big part of that was losing the India market. So just to recap the story, in 2018, India had taken over as our second largest market, had displaced Canada. Mexico is always our number one market. Canada is usually number two. India, for some reason, was really skyrocketing, and it had become our number two market, and it was going gangbusters. And then the former president imposed the steel and aluminum tariffs. And India retaliated by at with retaliatory tariffs on some products, including apples from the US. So the total tariffs were 70%, and there were some pre-existing tariffs, but US exporters were able to kind of power through those. But that additional 20, I think 20% tariff that was added as a result of our steel and aluminum tariffs really brought the thing crashing down. So again, we went from India being our number two market to basically it went to near zero. And so we were working constantly, particularly on the current administration, to say you've got to fix this. We had no dog in that fight. We don't have a dog in the fight with respect to steel and aluminum tariffs, other than it makes anything that we buy made from steel and aluminum, like packing equipment and tractors and so on and so forth, more expensive. But nonetheless, we don't want to be a part of this fight, and we're just collateral damage in this fight. And so we had continued to push that. Our board of directors met a year ago, just right now, with in the White House with the president's advisors on trade. And they made a very compelling and eloquent argument for why they needed to negotiate those tariffs away. We had continued to work behind the scenes on that. And so we were very pleased then in July, the White House invited US Apple to be a part of the welcome ceremony for Prime Minister Modi from India. And so I and two members of my team went there, and it was exciting. It's fun. Anyway, and then just a few hours after that, the White House announced that in fact they had negotiated the tariffs to come off of U.S. apples. So in the meantime, of course, India was still buying apples. Nature abhors a vacuum, and so other countries had moved in to take that market over. Iran, Turkey, some other countries not particularly friendly to the United States, but at least we have the opportunity again to ship there. Now, again, as I said, we went from being a number two market to almost zero. It's coming back. We're shipping to India again. We'll probably, at the end of this year, we'll probably be, maybe a third of what we were in 2018, but, nonetheless, sales are happening. So that's great. In the meantime, US apple growers lost about $500 million in sales to India, and that's painful for any sector of agriculture, and it's especially painful for us because it took decades to build that market. And so to lose it was really, really painful, but at least we're back in the game again. And then the loss of export markets has also forced the apple industry to look inward at the domestic market. Okay, what can we do to try to move apples, even within the United States. And so we have a really good relationship with USDA when they are making purchases, and they frequently make purchases of apples for school lunch program, for military, and for prisons and so forth. And we went to them. The U.S. Apple Executive Committee charged me in August with going to USDA and saying, we need a significant purchase, but we don't want to displace normal sales that would have already been made to the government for school lunches and the military, because that, displacing a commercial sale doesn't really gain us anything. And they said, so we would like the USDA to purchase apples for food banks, community food banks, because that would be an additionality to what is ordinarily sold to the government. So we made that pitch. We recommended, varieties and sizes that we thought would help USDA get the most bang for its buck, but also, remove the largest quantity of apples from the market. And we started that in the fall. And so as a result of that, USDA has purchased almost 3 million boxes of fresh apples and about $26 million in processed
Nice.
products. And we think they're not done yet. There are still food crises around the world, and USDA has stated that they want to try to fill some of that need with produce. And of course, apples probably travel better than any other type of specialty commodity or produce. And as an example, Gaza would be one place where the infrastructure exists, because we already export apples to Israel through the port of Haifa. So it should be a doable thing to get apples in there. That hasn't happened yet, but we're pushing that information into the department to try to help them understand that the industry stands ready to be a part of that solution. So whether it's, trying to get back to a more normal export picture, or looking domestically at what we can do to move apples to people in need here, it's a win-win, and we're happy to try to carry that message.
Yeah, and I think, I know I heard it my first go around in the industry. The challenge to all of this too is that apple consumption isn't growing exponentially. It's I don't think it's dropping, but it's not growing in a way that also can help get some of those apples. So, and I trust me, I am doing my best. I have a large amount of apples waiting to be eaten or right in my apartment. But talk about some of that too. And I know I'm sorry it's not on the questions, but I'm sure you're ready to answer that. But what is US Apple doing to try to up just general consumption?
Right. Well, we're for the whole month of February and continuing on, our social media for the whole month was focused on the health and wellness benefits of apple consumption. I remember reading in your publication a while back about the tremendous growth in blueberry consumption. And as I recall the article, it really kind of distilled down to the whole idea of antioxidants, which kind of makes me laugh. I mean, I have a background in science and in chemistry, when I read that, I was like, you know what? You could stop 100 people on the street and ask them, and probably not one of them would be able to tell you what an antioxidant is or what it does, but they all know that it's good for them. I guess that's all that really, really matters. And so how can we, I mean, we have antioxidants in apples. We're high in fiber, we've got vitamin C, we've got a lot of things. And maybe it's easy to take that for granted that people know these things, and they probably don't know these things. So we're trying to, present very simple, attractive messaging on our social media channels about, are you aware that apples, are tied directly to brain health and lung health and heart health and gut health and on and on. So we're doing what we can. I'm sure that I'm sure that we could do a lot more, But we agree that there's so much that could be done, and we're trying to nibble around the edges, but I know people are really casting about for ideas and how we can promote that more. But I wanted to also back up to to your point about consumption trends. And it's true that consumption of apples is flat on a per capita basis. It's kind of just growing with population. And I try to be a optimistic person, and I kind of look at that almost as a glass half full situation, because when I think about being when I was young and growing up on a farm in the town where the one grocery store that my mother shopped at, this town was less than 1,000 people, had one grocery store. And for a couple months in the summer, yeah, there'd be strawberries and blueberries and blackberries and raspberries, but for 8 months out of the year, probably there were apples. And then it was canned fruit, canned cling peaches, canned pears, and so forth. I can go into that same little grocery store today, or any grocery store in any tiny farm town across America, and you'll find grapes in three different colors, and you'll find all of the berries, and you'll find kiwis and avocados and mangoes, and the fact that all of those things are, new within the last 20 or 30 years, let's say, there's a lot more competition for space in the retail aisle. So, are there opportunities to grow the domestic business? I'm sure there are. But also, we've got a lot more competition than we ever had. So the fact that we're even maintaining where we have been is, to me, not a horrible situation. It certainly could be made better, but and we have some advantages that those competitors don't have. I'll probably hear about this from the people who watch your podcast, listen in, from other sectors of the produce industry. But I think they would have to admit that apples are probably the most portable of fruits. You can put it in your pocket or in your purse or in your car or whatever, and we've got that advantage, and we're just trying to figure out how can we as an industry sort of leverage the what advantages that we have and remain relevant.
Well, and one thing that I always say when I talk to folks in the apple industry for stories, apples have such a unique spectrum of flavor profiles. They're not the Red Delicious that I had as a kid. There are a ton of different apples, and the types of apples I like are probably not the type of apple that somebody else might like. I understand I have, given my experience in the industry, a little bit more of a sophisticated palate than maybe many have. But it is really interesting. If you like really sweet apples, there are really sweet apples. If you like tart, there are tart apples, different sizes. The one thing that it doesn't blow my mind, because obviously I've seen it grow, is just the recognizing of the different sizing of apples. So you have smaller sizes for kids. It's not just a rocket. There are those little the snack size apples. It's and the amount of apples that come out every year, new flavors, it's fantastic, because it's such an opportunity to have a discussion and to have taste testing and to try different apples. So, there's something for everyone. Now, the challenge to all of that is, how do you get that into someone's face when, they kind of understand what a kiwi is, but do they understand what a new apple variety might taste like? Maybe not. But, that's the one great thing that apples have going for them, is it's not just the set five varieties that everyone's known for a long time. There's new ones coming out. There's opportunities for different flavor profiles. And then, I'm not even scratching the surface on like pink and red apples now. There's, the flesh is different too. So there's so many opportunities. But, I think that's one thing apples have going for them. But then, how do you reach that audience? That's obviously the challenge for the future.
Yeah, it's a two-sided coin for sure. I mean, with the exception of, as I mentioned, like grapes that come in different colors, but I can't think of other produce where there is such a range of taste profiles. There's it, going into any grocery store, there's going to be at least six varieties of apples. So that's marvelous, I think, that we have a taste for every palate. The challenge that we maybe aren't doing such a good job at is how do we communicate to consumers? If I walk into a store and I see an apple that I've never seen before, why would I buy it? Like let's say, I'm a Gala, buyer or a Honeycrisp buyer, and I walk in and I see, a Cosmic Crisp now, from Washington. Why would I buy that? Other than, okay, it happens to be on sale and the price is lower than what, than the Honeycrisp. Or I'm curious, and probably people don't. I mean, why would you? I'm weird that way, but probably most
Me
people
too.
are. It's like they're curious, or maybe somebody recommended it. So what I'm saying is that it's there's no direct information. Like this is a tart apple, or this is a sweet apple, or this is in between, or whatever. I mean, we can probably do a better job of communicating to people what they might expect if they buy one of these new varieties, because there are a lot of them, and I enjoy, trying them and seeing how they're different. But it's a challenge for, for consumers, I think.
I was just thinking about a text I got from my mom not too long ago. She was asking me, she likes really sweet apples, and she was asking me if she should buy a Pink Lady, and I said, I don't think you're gonna like that one as much. I like them, but I kind of said, maybe you should try a different variety, because she doesn't like tart apples, and I know that. But like I said, I like tart, my mom doesn't. We've kind of got two different flavor profiles represented. Well, I could talk about varieties for forever with you, but I do know you actually have other things you probably need to be doing. So, kind of bringing it back to that food commodity pricing and, grower returns. So, obviously we've talked a lot about apples, and I do think that our conversation does relate to other produce commodities, but thinking about everybody else who's listening to this podcast that maybe doesn't grow apples, isn't involved in it with apples at all, what do they need to be thinking about or know or do about all of this price inflation and returns, and just what should they be thinking about?
Well, that's a question we could probably, gnaw on for the rest of the afternoon. I mean, I will put a pitch in for our Outlook conference in Chicago in August. We're working. In fact, I just got off a Zoom call before this one with one of the speakers we've already lined up, who's going to talk about some of just those questions, like how can we market our crop better, and hopefully bring in better returns. I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it, Christina, because with the size of the crop that we had coming on the heels of, the crops before and the crop that we'll have this year, it's going to be a challenge to move all these apples. And we've got growers that are, third, fourth generation. I know growers. I know a grower from on our board of directors who's an eighth generation grower. And a lot of these people are looking around like, how does this story end well? How do we hang on with our fingertips? And to your point earlier about like, why do farmers do this? And it's a blessing for us. You and I essentially have, office jobs. But I would say to all city people, we're darn lucky that farmers love farming. As I drive around and I go visit people in the apple industry, and I've seen this, so many places, a blacktop road on this side is an apple orchard, like the one, behind my head. And on the other side of the blacktop, road is a housing development with million-dollar homes, and I look at that and I think, if these lots are selling for $250,000 a piece, and they're putting million-dollar homes on them, Like, why is the apple grower on the other side of the road? Why is he growing apples? I mean, I'm glad that he is, or she is, but they clearly could sell their land to some developer, and as you said, retired to Florida or Phoenix, wherever they want to go. It's a miracle that more don't, and it's to our advantage that they don't. It's to our tremendous great good fortune that they love what they do. How many of them will continue to make that choice to stay in farming in the next, 12 to 24 months, I think is going to be it's going to be a picture that's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah. I hope for our sake that we don't lose too many growers. I know this is what you love about the industry, and it's what I love about the industry too, is just getting to talk with such great and fantastic people, in all commodities, but
Right.
obviously apples, I know apples from my previous time, so it's obviously something that I care about deeply.
Well,
But
I'm now in my 10th year at US
yeah.
Apple, and I still love it. And I had spent my whole career before that in other segments of agriculture. And people ask me, how is it different, or how do you like it compared to what you did before the apple industry? And I always say, well, growers look the same everywhere. They're just driving the same pickup trucks. They're wearing the same Carhartt and fleece vests and all that. I mean, they don't look different, and they have the same challenges. But I will say that I find apple growers to be uniquely optimistic. And I've thought about this. I've spent some time thinking about it. I think maybe because, when they plant those trees, they know that they've got to have a long
Yep.
time horizon. I'm planting these trees. They're not going to even produce any apples for 3 or 4 years. And then those trees are going to be there, hopefully for 20 years at least, unless I tear them out because I made a bad choice of variety or something. So I think that sort of, lends itself to a long horizon, and you would have to be optimistic to go borrow the kind of money that they have to borrow to do that, and say, I'm in this for the long haul. Where I grew up in row crop agriculture in Northwest Iowa, if corn doesn't work so well out this year, I'll plant soybeans next year.
Yeah.
And they can go back and forth. There's no penalty really for going back and forth. Apples, when you plant those trees, you're in. And so I do think that they are generally an optimistic set of people, and for that reason they're fun to be around.
Absolutely, and wise too. I feel like just it's something about, going to work with Mother Nature, that there's just this different attitude that's just, it is fun to be around. It's also kind of refreshing just to be around someone who kind of understands that there's a bigger picture to everything. So, yeah.
I agree.
Well, Jim, is there anything else? I've occupied a ton of your time, so is there anything else you want to share that I didn't ask about?
I think we covered it. It's been great to see you and your smiling face again, and I look forward to seeing you in person. And yeah, things are busy. We've got our fly-in next week, so we got
That's
growers
right.
coming from all over the country to come and go visit their members of Congress, House and Senate, and advocate for some priority issues like, trying to bring some logic and rational thinking to the ag labor picture and exports. And yeah, so we're busy, but it's good to see you, and thank you for showing interest in what we're doing. Happy to help.
I just want to say a huge thank you again to Jim Baer of the U.S. Apple Association for joining me on today's podcast. It's great to connect again with a familiar face and to be back talking apples. And I also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, you can catch new episodes of Tip of the Iceberg on your favorite podcast platform like Google Play, Spotify, Apple, and more. And that's a wrap for this edition of Tip of the Iceberg, brought to you by The Packer and PMG Magazine. Join us again soon for more industry insights. Thanks so much. Bye.